2 of, I'm sorry, episode number 6 of Tech Talk today on WCCR 94.5 LPFM, live from the beautiful campus of University of the Cumberland in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Triple T provides you with the latest news in the tech world and our opinions of what it all means. I'm Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. Let's get Triple T started with this week's Tech Roundup. All right. Probably one of my favorite bits of news that we are we're continuing on is deal with Windows in China. Let's see here. First, Windows, now Office, is being banned by China's government. Instead of Office, China will use its own internally grown software as a replacement for the popular productivity suite, CRI's report claims. This news is obviously a huge blow for Microsoft, which is trying to penetrate the Chinese market with legitimate copies of its software. At one point, former Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer said that 9 out of 10 copies of Windows in China were pirated versions. While the Chinese government is trying to actively avoid Microsoft software in favor of its internal platforms, we wonder if Microsoft will work directly with the Chinese to remedy these woes. China is a massive market, and for Microsoft to have its software shut out of this territory could severely cut potential profits. So far, China has not placed any bans on Windows phones, but we wouldn't be surprised to see this happen in the near future. But then I saw an update here that said, Microsoft saying this isn't true. So, I mean, I could see people seeing that they're going to go that direction, but, you know, I don't know.
9 out of 10 copies. That's are pirated. That's pretty huge. Yeah. That's a lot of market loss, a lot of money loss for
that
Microsoft. For
definitely
sure.
Is. This sound kind of funny, but I've seen a lot of YouTube videos that were made on Windows machines that looks like they had the Chinese on them, and almost every one of them says this is not genuine. So, you know, we'll see.
We'll see what Microsoft decides to do about that. A Network World article: Eastern European-based attackers gained access to the networks of energy providers by tampering with software updates for industrial control systems, gaining a foothold that could be used for sabotage, Symantec said Monday. The Dragonfly Group, which appears to operate from Eastern Europe, compromised 3 ICS vendors, adding a piece of remote access malware to legitimate software updates. Given the size of some of its targets, the group found a soft underbelly by compromising their suppliers, which are invariably smaller, less protected companies. Mm-hmm. That was a quote by Symantec. The companies unwittingly installed the malware by downloading the software updates from the ICS vendors. Symantec did not identify the vendors, but said it had notified the victims in various computer emergency response centers. Those affected were energy grid operators, electricity generators, and petroleum pipeline operators, with the majority of them in the U.S., Spain, France, Italy, Germany, Turkey, Poland, and that was from a Symantec quote there as well. So, looks like some folks hacked hacked the back end of some energy systems, and then when those suppliers went out and did upgrades on the energy systems, it brought the malware in with the update.
Oh man, I mean, that's, you know, coming from a separate company. I mean, you can do all you want to all the protections you can, but you've got to make sure the people you're getting your products from are just as protected. I mean,
exactly.
Well, we've mentioned that before.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, how important it was that energy resources be protected, because, you know, those energy resources are extremely important. I mean, what happens if the power goes off? What happens if the water doesn't run into your house anymore? What happens if, right, you know, the power grid goes down? And that's a big issue.
Very big. Let's see here. Slashdot. According to a blog post from Greg Polak, CEO of The Code School, Google is paying for 3 free months for any women and minorities interested in tech to expand their skills. The offer is part of Google's $50 million Made with Code initiative, which aims to help close the gender gap in tech, while Google is also offering the same vouchers to the women in attendance to its annual I.O. Developers Conference this week. The search giant has released an online application that's available to women everywhere. Google says it's available vouchers for women number in the thousands.
Anytime you can get free training, take it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just... it doesn't matter if you're a minority or a woman or a guy, or anybody, if you can get free training, take it. I mean, it's good stuff.
My first thought was, you know, well, what about the majority groups, and what about men? You know, but then again, you know, they're trying their hardest to get those groups to get the difference in, I don't know, socioeconomic classes in it. Everybody, I mean,
yeah, I mean, if you're within that group, I mean, if you could, if you wanted to learn more about, you know, technology, and especially about writing code, check that out with the Google Code School, or Google Made with Code initiative. And that, you know, anytime you get free stuff, especially free training, go for it.
Yeah.
Another Network World article: Google has launched a new site called cookiechoices.org. It's cookie choices, like I have a choice to make, .org, to help visitors of European sites learn more about the digital breadcrumbs they may leave behind through cookies. And if my kids are at home listening to this, they're going, cookies, cookies, because they like cookies. But we're not talking about that kind of cookie. We're talking about a piece of information that's left on your web browser that a web server places on your computer, as long as you've allowed your web browser to do that. And it helps the website to recognize your machine when you go back to that site.
Now,
so sometimes cookies are good, sometimes they're bad. Sorry, Kurt.
I was just about to ask you. So let's say I go to a website. What advantages do I have for letting, say, Google or whoever leave a cookie? Typically, in a nice world, what benefits does a cookie give to me?
Well, first of all, and I know some people would say this isn't good, but for targeted advertising. Mm-hmm. So if you've Googled several products and you're shopping, then they take and put those cookies on your machine, and then those cookies talk back to the web server when you go to a different page, and they say, okay, you've been looking at such and such. Let's you know, show you some advertisements for that. But not only that, but for any type of data that is recurring, you know, something that
username.
You do. Yeah, well, and a username is usually a saved form of some type, but you know, any type of data that you do over and over that you would typically have to be redundant upon, and that would have to transfer back and forth across bandwidth, a cookie can kind of help with that. And that cookies and caching and saved forms, they all work together.
Right.
But the site that we're talking about, cookiechoices.org, includes code that publishers can use to incorporate notifications into their own sites and apps. The notifications could take the form of a pop-up alert or a bar at the top of the screen to give details like visitors' browsing history or profile information. The site is meant to address European laws that require digital publishers to give visitors their sites and apps information about their use of cookies and other data. So in Europe, there are different laws than there are here in the U.S., and they have to provide an immediate information to a user that says, okay, I'm taking cookies, even if the user knows that they've allowed cookies. They have to say that on the site. People in other countries like the U.S. could see notifications too, Google said, unless the publisher adds their own geographic restrictions. And it's not clear exactly when the site launched. Google didn't immediately respond to that comment. And once again, here's the definition. Cookies are files stored on people's computers that help enable targeted ads, which is the lifeblood of Google's business. Google already provides information about how it uses cookies in its terms. And as well, if you're using Chrome, it provides that inside the managing cookies section as well.
Gotcha. I've actually learned a little bit of something. Let's see here. I just love this one. I had to mention this one. The protesters launch a 135-foot blimp over the NSA's Utah data center. If you've been, you know, listening to any news, you'd see that the NSA is getting into a little bit of hot water because they are doing some, doing surveillance through, basically any means they can possibly do. So a group, Greenpeace and the Electronic Frontier Foundation, they've launched a 135-foot thermal airship, blimp, early Friday morning to protest the agency's mass surveillance programs and to announce the launch of Stand Against Spying, a website that rates members of Congress on their support or opposition to NSA reform. The full message on the blimp reads, NSA, illegal spying below, along with an arrow pointing downward in the Stand Against Spying URL. Let's see, the quote here. We thought it would be fun to fly an airship around the Utah data center, which in many ways epitomizes the NSA's collect-it-all strategy, says Rainey Reitman. An activist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. We wanted to have a way to symbolize that our movement is getting quite confrontational with NSA surveillance in a visceral way. I actually had to put a picture of this. It's this big green, there's a bunch of other colors, rainbow on there. It's this big arrow pointing to illegal spying below.
These guys have nothing better to do with their time.
Oh my goodness.
I'm confused. I mean, maybe I just don't understand, but I mean, I understand the background of what's going on with the NSA and everything. And I mean, it's been going on for years, but does this guy not have anything better to do with his time?
What will this change? What is the end goal of this? Oh, I think it would be fun. He actually said, we thought it would be fun to fly an airship around the Utah Data Center. I mean,
well, read that part about what some of the people in Utah thought about it. They had no idea what was going on.
Let's see. This stunt was timed. Approximately many members of Congress had roadblocks on the lines. Let's see here. At least some Utahans, people from Utah who spotted the airship didn't quite get the message. There was an NSA blimp on my way to work this morning. Why do they need a blimp? The hashtag, why do they need a blimp? Hashtag, what was it doing? Hashtag NSA, wrote one local on Twitter. Wasn't a huge fan of the NSA blimp that saw me on the way to work this morning, added another. So
so they thought the blimp was
from NSA. NSA. Yeah.
So I think if you look at the picture of the blimp, I think the, what was the name of this group?
Greenpeace and the Electronic...
the EFF, whatever it is.
Electronic Frontier Foundation.
They needed to do a little better job with their font on the side of the blimp, because it's in huge font. It says NSA. And then the rest of it, you really can't see from more than, you know, half a mile away. So, and you know the road is way off from the NSA building.
Right. More than likely, that was probably their goal, knowing how some people think.
But so they wanted people to think the NSA was using a blimp to spy on them?
It's untelling. I don't know.
CNET article says Google quietly announced, we'll just move on from that. Google quietly announced in a short blog post that it was killing QuickOffice.
Oh.
The word processing app for Android and iOS. The app will no longer come preloaded on Android devices, and in the coming weeks it'll disappear from Google Play and the Apple App Store. If you already have it installed, you can still use it, but just know that Google no longer supports it and won't push out any new updates. The blog post doesn't say much about why Google made this choice, but it isn't surprising. Earlier this year, Google introduced standalone apps for Google Docs, Sheets, and Slides, essentially moving all the editing features from QuickOffice to those apps. And when those apps came out, Google also removed editing features from Google Drive, which was a one-stop shop for storing, organizing, and editing your files. So if you're using QuickOffice on your Android or iOS device, it'll still be there, but there'll be no updates for it. Just be aware that it's going away.
Seems like they're almost pulling in Apple here, where they'll have a product that does something for many years, and then they decide to either combine its features into something else, or I guess just rebrand it as something new and, you know, kill it after a while. I mean, it's not a big deal, but it sounds like, you know, they're either they've got bigger ideas ahead or bigger things on the horizon. But
well, I mean, I think they've watched Microsoft. And, you know, Microsoft is Microsoft is the backward compatibility king of the world. I mean, they have, you know, software that you can still put things in XP mode in Windows, you know, 7. You can still put things in, you know, in a mode that will allow you to run apps even from 95 and 98 in Windows 7 if you can get the compatibility mode set right. And to be honest with you, that's just ridiculous. I mean, things have got to change. You know,
I can understand.
It's got to move forward.
Yeah, maybe one version back, maybe two. But, yeah, I understand. How many years did XP, was XP supported? 14 years, was it?
Yeah. And, I mean, there's still people out there that have, there's programmers out there that won't change their code. And I understand. I used to be a programmer. I understand it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to change the code. But you just got to do it. I mean, it's got to change.
Oh, yeah. Let's see here. In cryptocurrency news, California legalizes Bitcoin. GetOnSlashdot, somebody writes, I don't even want to attempt to pronounce that username. California Governor Jerry Brown has signed a law repealing Section 107 of California's Corporations Code, which prohibited companies or individuals from issuing money other than U.S. dollars. Before the law was repealed, not only Bitcoin, but everything from Amazon coin to Starbucks stars were technically illegal. The law was generally not enforced. Interesting.
A California law that's not enforced. Now, that's unusual. A CNET article says Twitter on Monday said it's purchasing Tap Commerce, a mobile device advertising technology firm, as it aims to expand its business beyond the core social network. Tap Commerce is technology which is used by eBay and Supercell, which is a game maker. They make Clash of Clans. That's one of the big ones they make. Attempts to convince users who downloaded an app to reopen it and use it. The technology could be particularly appealing to retailers who could direct users to their already installed app to help finish a sale. Both companies confirmed the deal, though neither said how much. Tech blog Recode said that the price paid was about $100 million. A Twitter spokesman did not immediately respond to comment or respond to a request for a comment. And there's a quote here from the VP of online sales for Twitter, Richard Alfonsi. Quote, consumers are starting to use their phones not just to install and use apps, but for making purchases of both virtual and real-world products and services. Advertisers spend aggressively to get new users, but reactivating existing or previous users can provide just as an attractive return on investment. So essentially what they're trying to do is get people to use an app and to keep using the app, not just to download it and have it stored out on their phone or their iPad or even their computer, but especially on their mobile device and just forget about it. And that's pretty common, right?
Yeah. I'll go through every once in a while and think, what was I doing when I downloaded that? But, And now, I've seen this on iOS devices specifically, especially games, where you'll say, yes, allow to send notifications. And if you don't play for a while, it'll say, like the Supercell, your clan needs you, please come back. Or one of my favorites, 2048, I don't know if anybody's played that, but it come back. It came up and said, you know, you need to get this tile. You can almost get the 1024 tile. You know.
You can save the princess.
Exactly. So I guess there's now a company that does that. So, whatever. Let's see here. In automotive news, Google and Detroit are split on autonomous cars. That's a surprise. An anonymous reader writes in with a story explaining that conscientious history between Google and Detroit automakers over the future of self-driving cars. In 2012, a small team of Google Inc. engineers and business staffers met with several of the world's largest car makers to discuss partnerships to build self-driving cars. In one meeting, both sides were enthusiastic about the future of futuristic technology, yet it soon became clear that they would not be working together, and this is more recently, not be working together. The internet search company and the automaker disagreed on almost every point, from car capabilities and time needed to get it to the market, and to extensive collaboration. It was as if the two were, quote, talking a different language, unquote, recalls one person who was present. As Google expands beyond web search and seeks a foothold in the automotive market, the company's eagerness has begun to reek of arrogance to some in Detroit who see the danger as well as danger as well as promise in Silicon Valley. So apparently Detroit's not completely against it. They just see that, you know, Google really has no idea how the car, you know, industry works, apparently. I mean, I could see them thinking, you know, we have this technology, we're ready to push it out, but
at first, I thought you were talking about the city of Detroit. I thought, man, the city of Detroit nice to Google, because Google has lots of money and the city of Detroit has negative money.
Well, yeah, like automotive industry.
Right, but I got you. Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah.
Listeners. That's very interesting. I mean, really, let's say we designed some new car or some other. You know, I wouldn't know the first thing that, you know, where would this fit in the you know, what type of models, you know, where's the market? I guess the folks at Detroit really don't know, you know, who exactly is going to want a self-driving car. You know, well, some people would say, oh, yeah, everybody. But there's a lot of automotive enthusiasts that thinks this is a terrible idea. You know, of course, then again, I'm sure whenever cars were replacing horses that a lot of people thought, no, this is a terrible idea.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
we still have horses.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it'll just take time. I mean, any type of new technology like that is going to take time to ingrain itself into the economy and into the...
Find its place.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's coming, you know. Whether it's like we see in the movies where, you know, you're laying down there shaving yourself while you drive to work, I don't think it's quite going to be that, but a more autonomous car. Mm-hmm. Not so much the autonomous car,
right,
but a more autonomous car.
Like movie iRobot. Have you seen mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where it says, you know, are you ready to drive or override automotive? You know, yeah. He said, oh, no, he was driving in manual mode, you know. Yeah, what was he doing? driving.
But, I mean, you know, if you really think about it, that's kind of like the manual transmission and the automatic transmission.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, years ago, all you had was the manual transmission. You hear people like my dad talk about three on the tree, mm-hmm. You know, where you had four on the floor. You know, you always had a manual transmission in a vehicle. And now you can't hardly find vehicles with a manual transmission.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look for it.
Yeah, right. You know, so, you know, about the only truck you can find anymore with a manual transmission is either certain types of Toyotas or a big like F-350, 450 truck or a big Chevy or, you know, a big truck of some sort. So, I mean, kind of along the same lines, I mean, technology is going – the automatic transmission was a technology that's grown. And, you know, I think this will grow too. It's just going to take time.
Of course, now what a lot of automakers are doing is the I guess you call it the manumatic – where mm-hmm. you've got a switch or something or other, and I've had people say, oh, yeah, manual, I drive that. And I'm like, do you really? And says, how many pedals does it have? Two. Why does that matter? Like, oh, you don't know.
How many times have you popped the clutch or killed it while you're trying to pull out? None. In a CNET article, Google, we should just play the death song today. Google on Monday announced that it will shut down social media network Orkut. I believe I'm saying Orkut is the way you pronounce it.
I think.
It's a more of a foreign social media site, and they're going to shut it down at the end of September. The service launched in 2004, the same year as Facebook, and is a hub for online interactions and photo sharing. The site never really caught on here in the U.S., but it found success in other countries like India and Brazil. Now, Google did not immediately respond for a request for Orkut's user numbers, but Google did toot the growth of Google Plus, which, as well as YouTube Ooh. And Blogger, as a reason that it decided to shutter Orkut. Paulo Gulger, Orkut's engineering director, said, quote, because of the growth of these communities has outpaced Orkut's growth, we've decided to bid Orkut farewell. And the site is officially going to go dark on September 30th. Existing users can export their photos and profile information using a service called Google Takeout, but new users are no longer able to set up accounts. So if you're one of our listeners and you're using this service, it's going to die, and you'll get transferred to Google Plus. If you've never heard of it before, don't feel bad. I've heard of it before, but I've never really seen it. And it's not something that's really popular in the States, but it is something that is going away. Kurt, have you ever used it?
Nope.
Okay. All right. So if Kurt hasn't used it, you know it's not very popular at all. Kurt's the guy that uses like 17 different types of web browsers, ones that I've never heard of before.
Let's try them all.
All right. So now that takes us out of the tech roundup, and it's time to transition into app of the week.
App of the week. Well, we would transition. Ha. There we go. Okay, the app of the week. Well, I guess if you're not pirating music, one of the best ways people get music now is you can buy them individually, one at a time, or the whole albums through iTunes, or you can pay for the service, and that's where you enter with Spotify. Spotify's pretty cool. I've not actually used the paid version. I've only used the free version. So do you have experience with the paid version?
I don't. My wife loves the free version, and my boys love the free version. And it's – anyway, but yeah. No, I haven't.
All right. So basically, you could compare this, I'd say, to iTunes, except it's a different business model. Whereas with iTunes, you pay per song or pay per album, or typically pay individually for things. Spotify lets you pay for the service and lets you listen to as many songs as you want to throughout that. The artists get paid according to how many listeners they have. And now, if you don't pay for Spotify, there are ads. If you're using, if you're just listening to it, you'll hear ads play. And you'll also see different banners on the sides and everything. I've got it on a couple computers, and it works just fine. And I'm really not picky. It's not a big deal if I hear a 30-second ad every 5 or 10 minutes. So, I've had no need to want to pay for it, but it's pretty cool.
It's really not that bad. The ads don't come on very often. My wife again loves to use it, and my boys, my wife created a couple of different playlists for my boys, a Disney playlist and a VeggieTales playlist. They really like that. And the nice thing about Spotify versus something like Pandora kind of just throws it all at you and you have to check down or check yes. But with Spotify, you can
more control.
It's you have a little more control. And even in the free version, you have more control, and you can have an account. Like my wife has an account, and I put it on my phone so that I have all the playlists. And I think one of the only differences on the iOS devices about whether, I know it's on the phone, whether you pay or whether you get the free, is whether or not you can actually pick the song in the playlist you want to play. So, like, if I was to pull up the VeggieTales playlist right now, it would be a shuffle play. So it just goes down through, yeah. But it shows you which one's playing, and it plays an advertisement. It seems like once every 30 minutes, but it's probably closer than that. But they're real short; you don't really even notice them. And I mean, is that good for the advertisers? Probably not. But I mean, there's all kinds of ads and stuff on the screen. But if you're not really paying attention to it for the consumer, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I will say this: I had it on an iOS device, and it would play just how you said, but I remember I put it on a Windows phone, and it I did the free 2-month test or whatever. I can't think of the right word is. Trial. Thank you. That's the word I couldn't think of. You went through the trial, and after the trial ended, it wouldn't play back anymore. It did not let you play. It said this is only available to membership. So that's one difference between iOS and at least Windows devices is they're releasing... you can actually play songs on the iOS one with the free version. I may have done something wrong, but it's suddenly said, nope, you have to pay for
this. That was on your Windows device, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, now I know it's been within the last 6 months, and I don't know exactly when it was, but it's been within the last 6 months that they changed and said you could play unlimited amounts on like
back.
A computer or an iOS device. Because before it was limited, you can only play so many hours at a time, but now it's unlimited for free, but you still get all those ads, which really is good for the advertisers.
I mean,
all it's sitting there and they get access to it.
I got actually a funny story about this. There was a band, I can't remember who it was. They set up with Spotify and they released an album. I think it was like their third album that was completely blank. There was no noise. It was completely blank, silent. And they told their fans, said, play this when you go to sleep at night. And said, so we'll get paid for, not having put any money down for, having any recording fees or anything. Well, Spotify caught on. And I believe, I don't know if this is true, they put it in their email to them. They said, we really liked your second album better. We had more work to it. But I thought that was pretty interesting. But they do, apparently artists get paid slightly less with Spotify than they do with iTunes. I don't know the details there. Probably shouldn't comment on it because I don't know. But,
anything to make a buck, right?
Absolutely.
All right, so that is our app of the day, and now we're going to transition into our deep dive.
And let's go to...
All right, some really interesting stuff in our deep dive today. First of all, we're going to start off talking about Aereo. Following Wednesday's adverse Supreme Court decision, Aereo will suspend its online service, which lets its subscribers watch over-the-air broadcast television via the web. A quote from Chet Kanogia, that's their CEO, quote, "We have decided to pause our operations temporarily as we consult with the court and map our next steps. All of our users will be refunded their last paid month." and that went out on the Aereo homepage on Saturday. Now, their CEO, who advised customers with questions to contact the company via email or their Twitter page, also encouraged them to stay involved with the company's legal fight on the website protectmyantenna.org. He wrote, quote, "Our journey is far from done." Now, Aereo rebroadcasts over the air, or did rebroadcast, over the air television through antenna farms, or arrays. But the Supreme Court ruled that the web-based video streaming service violates the copyrights of TV networks and sent the case back down to the lower courts. Aereo infringes on the performance rights section of the copyright because it sells subscribers a service that lets them watch TV programs over the internet at, quote, about the same time, end quote, their broadcast over the air. And that was written by Justice Stephen Breyer on the 6-3 majority vote. So, you know, some interesting stuff here going on with Aereo. You know, first of all, Kurt, did you think Aereo would win this in the Supreme Court?
To be honest, knowing how some of these larger, I'd say, networks and things operate, I really didn't think they would win. I don't think it would go through because people that have a lot of money, and I hate to say this, they seem to get their way more often than not. I'm not some kind of conspiracy theorist thinking that, hail corporate, nothing like that, but, I really didn't see this going through. It took me a while to understand exactly what was going on, but... the way I understood it, and now I see their both sides of it is, they being Aereo are recording cable, and then it sounds like they're rebroadcasting it. That that's essentially what's happening. That's what it sounds like to me. So I can understand that side of the argument. How it sounds like only one person is dipping in the pot, and everyone else is reaping benefit from it. But once you explain how it works a little bit, that now I can see the opposite side of things.
Right. I mean, essentially it's a service is what it is. So this has to do with antennas. So it's not like the dish that you have on your house or the cable that you have coming, cable TV that you have coming in your house. This is if you have an HD antenna receiver, either, posted up on your roof or sitting on top of your television, if you're lucky enough not to live in the middle of two mountains like we are here in Williamsburg. So if you live in a big town like Lexington or Knoxville, or even if you live up the road in Richmond or maybe even London, you could pick it up there a little bit. But you could set an antenna on your set top, on your box top. They don't call them that anymore. On top of your television. And you could pick up local TV stations. I mean, people's been doing that for years. I mean, I grew up at my house as a kid where you would walk over to the little box that sit there, and the little box had stickers on it, and you would turn that dial, and that would turn a motor outside, and that motor would turn the antenna to a specific direction that would pick up a certain channel. So, I mean, I grew up as a little kid like that, walking up. If you wanted to watch Channel 5, you walked up to you turned on the TV. You did channel 3 because it came through a modulator, and you turned that dial to channel number 5, and you could, it was kind of cool. As a kid, I liked to go outside and watch the antenna, it would rotate around. And then after a few seconds, after it rotated into position, as long as you weren't getting any huge storms or anything, you would get right there into the antenna spot where you could watch channel 5. So that's what Aereo is doing here. Aereo is setting up an array of these antennas. And obviously, 20 years ago we couldn't get antennas this small, but now they had antennas that were the size of a dime. Yeah. And they take hundreds of these antennas and put them on a board, and they take a whole bunch of these boards and put them in a box, and they put this box up on top of a space that they rent up on top of a building, or they purchase a space somewhere to put it where they can pick up good signal. And then each one of those antennas picks up, the frequencies of the station it's coming through. So just like the station that you're listening to today, we're on WCCR 94.5 LPFM. So that's coming through at 94.5 FM. And so that's a certain frequency range. And so that's the same way it works with television.
And only one station at a time.
Exactly. Only one station at a time in a particular area. And so that's the same way it works with television. So these antennas are picking up a certain frequency. And with Aereo, what would happen is you would get online or on your device, and you would say, okay, I want to watch such and such show on Channel 5. You click watch, and then your specific antenna that you've been assigned to on the aerial side
would tune to
that frequency,
right.
and then after a few seconds, there was a few seconds delay, and it would start to stream to you. And you could also, I think it was $8 for 40 hours of DVR, so you could pause or rewind that show, mm-hmm. and then for $4 more for $12, they did 60 hours.
And two stations at once.
And you could record two stations at once. So, I mean, that's what Aereo was doing. So, I mean, our listeners, you may have not heard about Aereo in this area because it wasn't, you know, it was going on in bigger cities. But that's what Aereo was doing. Essentially, they were providing a service. In my mind, they were the person who came to your house, set up the antenna, brought you the VCR or the DVD recorder, or the little hard drive DVR box.
Right.
So let's just take this back in the day when you used to have VCRs and big antennas. They would have been the person who came to your house, set up the antenna, made sure it was set up right, made sure all the things worked, and set up your VCR and gave you all the tapes for your VCR and made sure it all worked good. And they came to your house and cleaned the antenna and cleaned the VCR. And all you had to do was walk over to the dial and turn that to the channel. I mean, in my opinion, that's what they were serving. Now, obviously, the cable company's idea was exactly opposite of that. Just like you were saying earlier, their idea of that was...
It'd be like me paying for the cable and recording somehow, you know, if I had five people and they all wanted to watch different things, I could record all five things on a VCR at once, VCRs at once, and then giving them the tapes. That's what the cable companies are equating it to, essentially, is I'm the one paying for it and they're not paying for it.
Well, and not only that, but for our listeners, when you're at home and you turn on the TV and you have cable or satellite, you're paying the satellite company and the cable company for that signal that's coming through, and then they're paying the other people on the other end, like ESPN or whoever, they're paying the local TV, CBS, NBC, for that content. But if you have an antenna at home, you get free TV,
right?
Because you pick it up because they have paid to put an antenna out there,
right?
Because that's just the way it's always been.
Yeah, so I guess
that's the way that people used to get TV.
I guess I think now, if getting more profitable, it's going to encroach on their subscriber base.
Because exactly.
Now I can get it on my phone over Wi-Fi or was it broadband?
Mm-hmm.
Encoded in three different forms, so or bit rates, I guess, is the best way to put it.
I mean, okay, I'm a cord cutter, cable cutter, whatever you want to call me. I mean, I have internet at home, but mm-hmm. I don't have cable TV. I don't have dish TV. I don't have anything like that. So, I mean,
I feel you.
To me, this is pretty cool. I like this idea. I like the idea of being able to, if I lived in a place where I could pick up free TV mm-hmm. through antenna, I would stick an antenna on my house and pick it up.
I would as well.
And the nice thing about the way it's working now is, used to, like I said, when I was a kid and I took the little dial and I turned it, that was analog. Okay, it was a transmission, and sometimes it would be fuzzy. And now it's HD. It's either you get it or you don't. It either comes in full HD or it doesn't come in at all. And so, you know, That's really cool, and I would love to have that. And you know, if I had the ability to purchase something like Aereo, I would probably do it. But that's probably not going to happen because
looks like they're shutting it down essentially.
Yeah, they're trying to because they're not making money off of it.
Maybe I'm missing something. Why do these stations broadcast this free anyway?
Well, I mean, now one of the things that you know, the CBS and NBC, ABC stations had talked about is if Aereo won, they were talking about taking their towers down.
So what good are the towers doing them anyway? Are we tapping into something that we're not supposed to be getting into? This is something I really don't have a lot of experience in. So why do they broadcast anyway?
I'm not a television expert. I mean, my understanding of it is that, you know, the cable companies and the dish companies get a feed not from that antenna. So, I mean, I wouldn't expect that's what's feeding to them. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think part of it is, you know, and it's always been a way to – television in the past was a way to communicate with the community. And even now, you know, it's a way to communicate with the community. There's, you know, you have WBIR in Knoxville. and WKYT in Lexington. Mm-hmm. And those have news shows at night. And they're watched by all kinds of people because it provides news to the community. So, in my opinion, that's probably why they have their towers out, so that they can... And I mean, their towers get paid for by the commercials.
Right.
So, right. And my understanding of the way the area was working is it didn't cut out the commercials. It was just giving you a stream of what you would get if your antenna was there, you know, if you had an antenna sitting on top of your TV. And another thing about aerial is if you were in an area... Okay, let's say that I live in San Diego, and I wanted to have an aerial antenna in New York. You can't do that. Aerial wouldn't let you do that. You could only subscribe to an antenna that was in your area.
Gotcha.
So, I don't know. I like the idea. I thought it was a great idea. I hate to see capitalism and good ideas beat down by Big Brother. Not Big Brother, the government, so much in this case. I'm not talking so much about the Supreme Court as I am talking about the lobbyists of the big companies, the big cable companies.
I don't know.
That's my thoughts.
I can see both sides, but man, it's I don't know. I want to root for the underdog, really.
Well, and you know, Aereo's not done yet. They're going to go back down to the lower court, and they're going to consult with the lower court and decide what needs to be done. And you know, it's pretty grim at this point, just to be blatantly honest. I mean, I don't think that they're going to survive this. But cool idea nonetheless.
Absolutely.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens to Aereo. If you want to learn more about their case, protectmyantenna.org and Aereo.com. Those are two places you can learn more about it.
That is it. A-E-R-E-O.
Exactly. Aereo, A-E-R. So we'll move on through our deep dive here. Another article from PC Magazine talks about some Wi-Fi security, and the U.S. Supreme Court has declined to hear a case in which Google is accused of violating a federal wiretap laws when its Street View vehicles collected unsecured data over Wi-Fi networks. So in September, an appeals court refused to throw out the case after Google requested an exemption under the Wiretap Act that allows for the interception of communications that are readily accessible to the general public. Google asked the Supreme Court to weigh in on it, but the High Court today declined to consider the case. Google did not immediately respond. Actually, that was yesterday that this happened. Google did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The issue is... equipment attached to Google's Street View vehicles meant to collect 360-degree mapping images, but the technology also accidentally gathered data from unencrypted wireless networks between 2007 and 2010. Google acknowledged their mistake 4 years ago and admitted that it amassed emails, passwords, photos, and chat logs from this, and there are several companies, like France, for example, handed down a €100,000 fine. U.S. FCC filed suit in 2012, alleging that Google, quote, deliberately impeded and delayed, end quote, an investigation, and proposed a $25,000 fine. Another levy was ordered a year later by Germany for €145,000, and Google also reached a $7 million settlement with 38 states last year. And included a promise to destroy all data collected in the U.S. So, essentially, what happened here? They have those. You've been out to Google Maps. Right. They have those street views, and they picked up unsecure, unencrypted data that was coming from home and business Wi-Fi routers. So, Kurt, I mean, you know, what's the obvious answer to this for the consumer?
Password protect your Wi-Fi. I mean, there's two different schools of thought here. If I move into a new apartment, and you know, there's a lot of people, a lot of households really close together, and someone has their Wi-Fi unsecure. What if, you know, they're doing that on purpose? Say, hey, join my free Wi-Fi. It's like, great, this person is providing community service to me. I don't know. You know, there's some people that think if it's unsecure, you must want everyone to connect to it, and that's. You know, that's how people do a lot of these days now. Maybe they did want everyone to connect to them. Now, the only thing I can see in the Google's favor is if you've ever opened Facebook on an iOS device on your iPhone and it immediately says, location accuracy is enhanced with Wi-Fi. That's the only thing I could see them accidentally getting the Wi-Fi networks, is if they had something like that turned on, because it's a lot quicker. You know, the ISPs, I really don't know how the networking works. They know where the Wi-Fi is locatable quicker than, say, going over GPS. That's the only thing they might be able to go off of, but
I think this was just as accidental as when I reach into the cookie jar and grab two cookies instead of one. I mean that's just my opinion, but I think this was just as accidental as that. I don't see it being accidental, you know. And Kurt's exactly right. Kurt was talking about your home Wi-Fi router. For our listeners out there, just because that you have your Wi-Fi router, maybe you know a little bit about your Wi-Fi router, and you said, okay, I'm going to lock down my Wi-Fi router to where only certain MAC addresses, certain computers, certain devices can get on my Wi-Fi router. You know, I'm secure now. Wrong. You're not. You haven't encrypted the data transmission between your Wi-Fi router and your device. So when you're transmitting data back and forth between your router and your computer, that data is what Google picked up. And if it's unencrypted, then they could just read it.
I got a pretty good analogy there. It's like me mailing a letter, but putting it on a poster board and not sealing it up in an envelope. And everywhere that the mailman walks, he's holding up this letter that you've written to somebody. And it says, you know, it's going to that one person, but anybody can see it as it goes by.
Exactly. It's not in the security envelope.
Right. We should probably have a Wi-Fi security. Wi-Fi is inherently insecure and unstable. And that's just the nature of the service. I mean, you've got how many signals are going through our bodies right now? I mean, through the whole electromagnetic spectrum, Wi-Fi is just a little section. I mean, we've got radio waves going through us. We've got microwaves. We've got, you know, honestly, probably even gamma rays. I mean, but their Wi-Fi is everywhere, and it permeates everything. That's why you can get it so in so many different places and through so many walls. Through the general nature of how radio waves work, electromagnetic waves work, it's not going to be that secure. You're going to have encryption of some kind.
Right. So, I mean, and it's really simple to encrypt your data. I mean, most wireless routers have a wizard that goes through and you say, okay, I want to encrypt my data. And it's going to encrypt it using, you probably don't want to use a WEP key. It's pretty insecure, even though it's better than nothing. But you use WPA or WPA2. Either a TKIP or an AES encryption, and all those acronyms and letters, essentially all that means is that the data, when it leaves your router, when it leaves your wireless device, it gets encrypted with an algorithm. And then when it gets to your device unencrypts it. And those two devices are talking to each other. And when they talk to each other, that communication is encrypted with a special key that you create. And not only can nobody get on your network at that point unless they know the key, that data is encrypted. So if you're driving home tonight, or if you're sitting at home listening to this, or if you're listening to the podcast and you think, I don't know if my data is encrypted or not, check your router, do some Google searching, look up your router instruction manual, and just look in the encryption section. It'll show you exactly how to do it. Encrypt your router. It's really important.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you have any neighbors that are close by, they'll think, oh, free Wi-Fi. All right.
Yeah, and you can hide your Wi-Fi router and things like that, too, which is kind of nice. And you can learn more about that in your router's manual. One more deep dive article for this evening. An Engadget article says, right now, iTunes U on the iPad isn't a complete educational tool. You can read textbooks, but not much else. You still need to use the old-fashioned email to ask a teacher a question, for example. But it isn't going to be much more useful. But it is going to be much more useful on July 8th when Apple releases a major overhaul to the app. The new iTunes U lets teachers create and manage courses entirely from the iPad, plucking source material from other apps and even the device's camera. Students, meanwhile, can get much needed interaction because you can now ask questions from the app or join in a class discussion. The launch may be well-timed as well. iTunes U upgrade is coming just as Samsung has unveiled a brand-new version of its school suite that has its own collaboration tools and they can push content to their students all at once. The students can participate in group projects, and it also arrives just after Apple lost a lot of support from the Los Angeles school system, which is now diversifying its device mix beyond iPads. So it's too soon right now to know whether or not the iOS app is going to be strong enough to counter the fiercer competition like the Blackboards and the Moodles of the world, but it should be at least handy for classes that have already bent on using iPad as their platform. So, I mean, you know, Kurt, you know, it's obvious that Apple's trying to get more in the education market here. Are they looking to become a learning management system?
That is a big step, and that's very different, because if Apple does that, they'll have to go through all kinds of, say, government regulations, like, say, FERPA compliance and all that stuff. And I'm not saying Apple can't do it, because Lord knows Apple has enough money to throw at anything, really. But I see one big thing that Apple has going for it, and that is that a lot of teachers in classrooms, will be at higher education or middle school, high school, they all really like iPads, for instance. You know, they may not even know why. I've heard of people just come up and say, we've got to get iPads. We've got to get iPads for the classroom. Like, okay. And you give it to them.
And they don't know what to do with it.
They don't know what to do with it. Yeah. They say, okay, why can't I, where's Office? Like, well, and this was back before Office was on the iPad. And say, well, where's Office? We're like, there is no Office. Well, of course, again, this was a couple of years back. You know, people see the Apple's amazing marketing, and it's convincing them they got to have it. They have no idea why. So, I mean, they have that going for them, where people hear Apple, oh, this has got to be good. And I'm not saying it won't be, but that is one thing they'll definitely have going for them. One thing they won't have going for them is, say, for instance, Blackboard is one of the biggest industry names in LMS and learning management systems, is what that stands for. That'll be very interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, and I agree with the article. I mean, for folks who are already engrossed in the iPad and engrossed in the idea of using an iPad in the classroom, mm-hmm. I think that they're going to enjoy using this app to help with their students.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I think that that's good. I have to admit, I'm excited about seeing it. I like iTunes U. I like the idea behind it. I like to be able to get the content there. And I think it's nice that they've made it a little more granular to where a professor can actually put their own content on there and interact with their students in the classroom with
it.
I think that's great. So that ends our deep dive for today. And now we're going to move into our next section, which is Tech in Numbers. Today on the stock market, it was a good day for the stock market. Dow Jones had one of the highest end-day numbers ever, and technology market was up a little over 1% today. And our top gainer for the day was Guidance Software Incorporated. They were up 10 points today. They were up almost a point today, but a 9% change. And Guidance Software is a provider of digital investigative solutions. And our loser for today, who went down almost half a point or 3.2%, was Data Watch Corporation. They're engaged in the design of the development, manufacture, marketing, and support of business computer software, primarily for operational reporting and data analysis. And that is Tech in Numbers.
All right. And let's go to probably one of my favorite things, a weird and wacky tech.
You just like the music.
I do like the music. All right, let's see here. I found one. I guess I love, people love their pets, and they will buy anything for their pets. And what I've definitely seen is the dog coat with speakers built in that play music. Now, this is called the Woofer. Woofer. let's see. The Woofer is a dog coat with speakers in it. It has a pouch in the back for you to insert your iPod, iPhone, or MP3 player with a standard headphone jack. Woofer customers want cool dog stuff and enjoy funny dog costumes. So, this enables more dog interaction in our lives beyond eating biscuits and barking. I'm reading directly from their website. Clothes for dogs used to be cute, but the Woofer lets you express yourself in a different way. These dog clothes let you share your music and make new friends for you and your dog at the park, on the street, or at a party. Use the Woofer while walking or running. If you're a musician, you can play your song straight from the back of your best friend.
This is expensive.
Oh, I didn't see what's the cost on it.
Small dog coat is $100, medium dog coat $110, and large dog coat $120. But the large dog doesn't look like a large dog. And then they make them for lady dogs too.
Oh, lady dogs. So essentially, I'm going to go running with Fido, and I don't want to. You know, you see the runners and put their device, on an armband or something or other. I guess this lets you broadcast it to the world by making your dog the stereo. Oh man, this is great. We've got to put a link to this on.
My 4-year-old would love to have one of these attached to him, though. I should buy one of these for my kid. He would love this. Micah would love this.
Oh, it feels like exploitation. I mean, the dog can't say no, or I don't like your music. I mean, the speakers. I mean, you look at this thing; it looks like a little jacket for the dog, and there's speakers like right in front of their hind legs, almost on their belly, on the sides. And I don't know. I mean, how much research and development went into this? I mean, when they did the pitch for the patent. I mean, could you imagine? Like, well, we want a stereo that moves with you.
I bet you they make good business, though.
Let's put it on the dog.
I bet you they make good business.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, that wraps up our show for today. We thank you for listening to episode number 6 of Tech Talk today. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/WCCR Tech Talk, and Twitter at WCCR Tech Talk. You can also catch the podcast on Facebook or by searching iTunes for Tech Talk today. So be sure to be back with us next week. We'll be back on the air. Or actually, we will not be on the air next week. We're going to be out next week, but we'll be back the week after that. And that does it for me. This is Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. Stay tuned for our next show on our Super Tuesday lineup for summer 2014. From 7 to 9, you'll have the Figure 4 Fallout with Russell Reidner, Bo Kidd, Casey Malone, Justin Harden, and Justin Durbin. And this has been 94.5 WCCR LPFM. Thank you very much, and you all have a great day.